Today, we have Natalie Fenimore, who's going to be giving us a very interesting sermon about life, relationships, that sort of important thing to us. She is a minister for lifespan religious education, which I had to ask her what that meant. It's that she is in charge of helping us as Unitarians think about the kind of education we want to provide for from the very earliest years up until some of us who are in our more later years, and so forth. So she does that in New York, Maryland, and in Virginia. So that's a project. Besides that, she's also a parish minister. Something we don't do that often, which I like to start my services with, is let's get up and say hello to each other. And let's, in particular, let's say hello to the newbies. Welcome them. So, thank you. I know for me especially, coming to the meeting house is about community. And so let's just take a moment while Walter gives us the prelude and think about our community.
Morning.
Good morning.
I'm the Reverend Natalie Fenimore. I bring you greetings from the Unitarian Universalist Congregation at Shelter Rock, where I serve on the ministry team. I call us to worship this morning with the words of Erica Hewitt, which I have edited just a bit. All of us are imperfect, but we're here to drop our defenses and trust that what happens in worship is powerful and life-giving. Together, we affirm that this day and our being together here now can make each of us braver, more compassionate, wiser than we were when we woke up this morning. So now, let us worship together. And let's join in the unison chalice lighting, which is in your order of service. Life is a gift for which we are grateful. We gather in unity to celebrate the glories and the mysteries of this great gift.
The central task of the religious community is to unveil the bonds that bind each to all. There is a connectedness, a relationship discovered amid the particulars of our own lives and the lives of others. Once felt, it inspires us to act for justice. It is the church that assures us that we are not struggling for justice on our own, but as members of a larger community. The religious community is essential, for alone our vision is too narrow to see all that must be seen, and our strength too limited to do all that must be done. Together, our vision widens and our strength is renewed in our community.
Join me in a responsive reading, number 594, which is in the back of the gray hymnal. So I'll say the words in bold, and you will say the words in italics. So I begin. We affirm and promote the inherent worth and dignity of every person. We affirm and promote justice, equity, and compassion in human relations.
We believe all people should be treated fairly.
We affirm and promote acceptance of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth.
We believe that our churches are places where all people are accepted and where we keep on learning together.
We affirm and promote a free and responsible search for truth and meaning.
We believe that each person must be free to search for what is true and right in life.
We affirm and promote the right of conscience and the use of the democratic process.
We believe that all people should have a voice and vote about the things which concern them.
We affirm and promote the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all.
We believe that we should work for a peaceful,
so one more. Oh, this was written before. It's people, I don't know if we really realize this. Our principles are voted on. We began as an association, the Unitarians and the Universalists joining, without these principles. And then they were voted on at various general assemblies. The original principles did not have the last one. And that is so that would be added to this. So what would we say about that principle? We would say that I can read what it says at the beginning. We affirm, we promote and affirm, we affirm and promote respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. I think that's an interesting thing. Many people don't spend a lot of time recognizing about ourselves, but our principles do change over time, and it's part of the wonderful and sometimes confusing part of being Unitarian Universalists is that we have a fluid commitment which enables us to bring in new things which we want to add and lift up as important. And so our last principle about the interconnectedness came about as a result of conversations within our congregations about what was missing that we wanted to lift up and affirm and hold as a principle. And so we have our last principle, and we may choose to add others. Perhaps you will be part of that discussion someday about new things that we learn to hold dear to our hearts that we want to add to our principles.
And Walter will give us a brief introduction to his seven key.
Words of meditation. Lately, I've heard from many people how hard it is for them to see love and beauty in the world in which we now live. There are so many reasons for fear, for anger, for hatred. They crowd our minds and our hearts and leave sometimes little space for other things. I can't blame anyone for those feelings. The reasons are so obvious around us. Our world comes at us in this flood of pain and grief. I do understand. We all can understand. But we can choose. We can call on the spirit of life and love and on this company of friends to give us hope and courage, to guide us towards love and renewal. So let us now open our minds and hearts to the spirit of love and ask it to guide us to renew us, to give us hope and courage in the midst of this grieving world. I think one of the gifts of the religious community is to take a moment to sit in beauty. I'm not sure how many of you actually listen to National Public Radio. I'm told that it is almost a requirement for membership in the Unitarian Universalist Association, but one of the things I used to love to do every morning was to receive a poem read often by Garrison Keillor. You know that you can receive those poetry, those poems online as a gift to you each morning. And one poem which I received in such a way was this poem, a love poem by Robert Bly, The Third Body. A man and a woman sit near each other, and they do not long at this moment to be older or younger or born in another nation or any other time or other places. They are content to be where they are, talking or not talking. Their breaths together feed someone we do not know. The man sees the way his fingers move. He sees her hands close around the book that she hands to him. They obey a third body that they share in common. They have promised to love that body. Age may come, parting may come, death will come. A man and a woman sit near each other. As they breathe, they feed someone we do not know, someone we know of whom we have never seen. In commenting on this poem, the writer Roger Houston says, in naming the third body, Robert Bly is speaking to the spiritual and personal at the same time. When two people love each other in this way, they discover a unity that is more than a mere merging. Their individuality may even intensify in such a love. Yet at the same time, they meet beyond themselves in this third place. This kind of love is a deep stream. It can hold everything that flows along its course without judgment. The difficult and the testing, as well as the good and the beautiful. What a grace. When this third body emerges between two people, they want to honor its presence in their lives by nourishing it with their attention and their love. I believe that we here now are creating a third body. We come into this religious community as individuals, but when we are here joined, we make a community which is both within and outside of ourselves, both spiritual and personal, both immediate and lasting. This religious community, the Unitarian Universalist Congregation of the South Fork, is our third body. It exists in and of itself, but also as our connection to the religious tradition that stretches thousands of years beyond the 31 years of this congregation's existence. Like some other faith traditions born of the Protestant Reformation, of which Unitarian Universalism is one, including the Baptist tradition of my childhood, Unitarian Universalism is organized around congregational polity. Our polity is how we govern our community of faith. Because of our own congregational polity, the authority in the Unitarian Universalist Church lies not in a religious hierarchy, no bishops or archbishops or popes, but with the individual members of each congregation. It's hard to imagine now, but there was once a time when people were killed because they held the belief that each member of a congregation should have equal standing. Because of our belief in a community bound together in mutual care, we call our own ministers here. We elect our own board or governing body. We build our own buildings and grounds, and unfortunately, we have to pay for their upkeep. The authority rests in the individual members of the congregation, and the responsibility also rests with the individual members of this congregation. Like voting in our American democracy, we often take for granted the great privilege of our governance of our own faith communities. We get to run things, to speak our minds, to ask questions, not asking questions then, not knowing, not engaging with this community is to betray the legacy of our religious forebears, is to betray the meaning of this congregation. Unitarian Universalism and American democracy grew up together, and both have needs of engaged participation if they are to grow into their ideals. If they are to grow into their ideals, they need participation by committed and informed, questioning and critical and compassionate people. While our individuality is central to the organization of our Unitarian Universalist congregations, and a respect for the contribution of the individual central to our congregationalism, we cannot define ourselves solely as just a bunch of individuals sitting in the same room at the same time to worship. Throughout Unitarian Universalist history, a reverence for individualism and a fear of the power of religious authorities have led our churches to be decentralized, perhaps too decentralized. We have worried that the creation of central authority would lead to the development of creeds, of narrowly defining what we believe. As early as 1882, the amendment to the Constitution of the Unitarian National Conference stated that while this Constitution embodied the views of a majority of Unitarians, it was distinctly understood that there is no authoritative test of Unitarianism. In 1862, they were already fighting about that. And none would be excluded from its fellowship who, while differing from us in belief, are in general sympathy with our purposes and practical aims. Still, the question arises, are we more than a collection of individuals? How do we define who we are and nourish and sustain our community? Unitarian Universalist historian David Robinson asserts that we need a doctrine of a liberal church, a way of articulating what it means to be a liberal religious community and not simply a collection of individuals who pursue their religious quests in isolation except on Sundays. We, Unitarian Universalists, continue in the same struggles that we've engaged in since the Unitarians moved to form their association after the American Civil War. We try to give space for individual freedom and also gain the strength that numbers and institution building can bring to us. Unitarian Universalists strive to hold our many elements together and at the same time maintain some stability. How can we maintain this balance? How do we nourish and sustain the third body, which is our liberal religious community? While our individualism is certainly a strength and sets us apart from many other traditions in some ways, it is not all that we should be. We must also consider the third body. The third body, the spirit of our gathered community, this is what defines and guides us. As Unitarian Universalist historian Conrad Wright suggests, we might consider, perhaps, that we are not quite so special as we often think we are. We are like most other religious institutions, church, mosque, temple, in many, many ways. All religious institutions struggle to answer the same basic questions. Who can be members? How is the individual congregation related to the denomination and the wider world? What authority do we appeal to for our foundation of faith? For us, it's been off and on a balance of reason, tradition, sacred writings, experience, as it is with all other religious traditions. While Unitarian Universalists have leaned heavily on reason, we cannot abandon the authority of tradition, sacred writings, or experience. And we also ask, often, what is the relationship of members to the minister and lay leadership? I know that we struggle with our many committees, with our long, long, long meetings. I know that we sometimes find it hard to get to the point of making a decision and moving on. I know that we often have a difficulty incorporating people back into our community after they have not won the majority decision that we have made. However, why do we continue to do this? Why don't our ministers and lay leadership dictate, make a decision, go? Don't worry about what other people are thinking or saying. Because I believe, I hope, that we do this because being congregational, giving everyone a say and a listen to, and honoring our processes is more important, or at least as important, as being efficient. Because we're not efficient. we can doubly then rejoice in our good outcomes when they come, because they have been part of a process that honors our spirit of community. Perhaps people who don't get their way can at least be sure that they have been heard, that they are still loved, and they are always welcome. And because of this, our ministry is a shared ministry. We share the duties, the responsibilities. We must. That is why we are here. We are a liberal religious community when we answer these questions about our identity, when we seek to define ourselves by using a religious philosophy. When we do that, I don't mean a politically liberal philosophy. In fact, using a liberal religious philosophy demands that we do not use a specific political affiliation as a measure of acceptance in our congregations. In a liberal church, members are not chosen. In a liberal church, all are invited to choose us. We try to develop ways to live in right relations with those around us. We seek inclusiveness, not exclusiveness, though we have to admit that exclusiveness can exist as a fact in our Unitarian Universalist congregation. Without regard to our intention, I think we need to recognize that there is a difference between our intention and the facts on the ground, the facts in the seats. And we need to work to bring our intention closer to those facts, always. We accept that while we may be bound together as a community along the basis of general agreement, there is a recognition and acceptance of our rights to individual difference. Our relationship to one another, to other Unitarian Universalist congregations, and to the wider world are based on a belief that we can work together for a common good because of a general belief in the possibility of doing so without demanding a creed. Our congregationalism, then, is a commitment formed in our individual freedom and autonomy to be interdependent. This is our shared understanding of how the world should work, and it is therefore at the heart of our theology. Our congregations are also sustained in many ways by the rites and celebrations we have developed to enhance our experience of being together. Many congregations develop covenants or promises or commitments that people make to each other when they are welcomed into community. But even without a formal covenant, our celebrations and traditions speak to who we are as a community. As a religious educator, I have been privileged to guide people through a Unitarian Universalist coming of age program. In this process, our young people go through a period of thoughtful reflection on their personal beliefs and their relationships to their congregations. Think about this. Our children come here, like most children come to most religious institutions, dragged by their parents. Get in the car, we're going. There will be juice. Goldfish crackers, a friend to play with, and a lovely playground. And on the way home, we'll stop at McDonald's and get you french fries, whatever is necessary. But there comes a period in our congregations where we turn to our young people and say, we want you to affirm that this is your place. We want you to choose for yourself that this is your religious home. I'm often struck by how easily our young people sit with these questions of faith. They have grown up in our congregations and take for granted the fact that they have a voice here. They take for granted the fact that they can ask questions. They take for granted that we don't know the answers. But this is a place where they are comfortable, where they feel empowered to engage in the big questions about life. Our children and youth see the Unitarian Universalist principles and practices as guidelines for actions and beliefs, both their own and those of our congregations. They watch us. They hold us accountable for what we have said we believe. They are our best critics. Why is there no recycling bin, they say to me. Why aren't we going on that march, they say to me. Why is there not this petition here, they say to me. Why aren't we comforting that person, they say to me. Why am I in the basement, they say to me, when I want to be upstairs with everybody else, they say to me. I think that they understand that they are becoming part of something larger than themselves by the time they stand before their congregation at their coming of age worship service. And this, in my first year as a Unitarian Universalist religious professional, 18 years ago now, I had a parent who came to my office to discuss our program for children at the church where I was working then in Maryland. I told her all about the curriculum. I was quite proud. I told her about the UU principles and purposes. I showed her the lovely classroom space. I told her about our volunteer training and support. I told her about the children's chapels, which I led, which I was also quite proud of. I showed her our playground. I told her that we provided snack. I told her all of the mechanics about what we did. And when I finished, again, still quite pleased with myself, she said to me, "But you did not say anything about love." I think that love is very important. And she was right. I failed that day because I did not understand that what people seek is a place of loving community. That it didn't matter how great my playground was. That if I had provided for her an understanding of us as a loving community, she would have overlooked the fact that we had no playground. If our love and connection and commitment to her and her family had been strong enough, it would have been enough. This religious community should not only have respect for the individual, but respect for the needs of the community we form together. Not only respect for the peoples of the world outside our community who can benefit from our care, not only respect for the earth, but love. Love for the individual, love for the community, love for the earth. Not an abstract, romantic love, I would say, but we are called to a mature, honest, challenging, engaging love. A love within and outside ourselves, both spiritual and personal and practical, both immediate and lasting. Remember, he sees her hands close around the book that she hands to him. They obey a third body that they share in common. Remember, they have promised to love that body. Age may come, parting may come, death will come. A man and a woman sit near each other, and they breathe, and they feed someone they do not know. Someone we know of, who we have never seen. This is not a perfect place with perfect people, but it is a caring place with generous spirits and wonderful ideals. I know that the third body can be sustained here. Love, real, nourishing love. Love is the doctrine of this congregation. May it be so. Amen. Please rise in body or spirit for our closing hymn, number 347, Gather the Spirit.
Service are the words for extinguishing the chalice. Let's say them in unison. We extinguish this flame, but not the light of the truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we carry in our hearts until we are together again.
Please remain standing. Join hands. Connect with your neighbor.
Connect with the rest of the community.
In benediction, I offer these words of Laura Lynn Bellamy. If here you have found freedom, take it with you into the world. If you have found comfort, go and share it with others. If you have dreamed dreams, help one another that they may come true. If you have known love, give some back to the bruised and hurting world. Go in peace.
Peace.
Please be seated for the post-boot.